Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
Have a celebration. Bake your cookies and cook your stuff. But here's the thing. I'm doing this in honor of the great thing that happened 2,000 years ago. We're celebrating the everlasting life that was accomplished by the incarnation. Right? Wouldn't have happened. Life, death, burial, resurrection of Christ would not have happened without the incarnation. So we celebrate that by doing it before the Lord and to the Lord. And that means we're thankful through the process. Let that be the punctuated reality of your Christmas celebration.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
If you want to destroy your marriage, you've come to the right place. Although you probably don't need my help. This is Wretched Radio. Go ahead, take it away, Jimmy. How can everybody destroy their marriage? Just go ahead and give life lessons.
Okay.
Speaking of life lessons, sorry, too much caffeine. Started to read a Ray Comfort book. It was given to me as a Christmas present at church on Sunday. It is what I learned after 50 years of open-air preaching. Wow, Ray's been at it for 50 years. He just celebrated his 75th birthday, still goes out, does open-air preaching, still goes out with his dog and witnesses to people one-on-one. That is faithfulness. He has learned much. And if you've been married for more than a minute, you've learned some stuff, particularly the things that you can do to undermine the strength of your marriage. We're all experts at that. Aren't we? After all, we are all sinners, and that means we'll probably be inclined to do things that don't strengthen what should be the most intimate relationship of your life. I've got a question for you, sir. Is your wife your chief confider, or is it your buddies? If it's your pals, I would encourage you to shift that, change that. It should be her. It should be the one that you do couch time with that shares the intimate, the deep stuff, what's really going on in there, how you're dealing with issues. And it should be a safe place for you. Oh, you know, in the garden, when you go back to Genesis chapter 2 and you read, they were naked and not ashamed. Well, sin brought in shame. But the ideal in marriage is that you're not ashamed. You're not embarrassed. You can be transparent with that one without any fear of reprisal or what? You think, huh? That's what your spouse should be, the great confider. As you encourage, advocate for one another and run the race to Celestial City. And yet there are landmines everywhere. So if you're looking for one to blow up your marriage, I maybe have it for you. This would be a good time for you to do you, and I will do me. Because I can't judge you. I can only deal with myself. So here are 7 habits that can destroy your marriage. Do not give yourself a pass too quickly on this. Number 7, not praying together. You know the answer. Are you praying together or aren't you? And if it's just meals, you're not praying together. If that's what it's come down to, that's just, and you wonder maybe why you're distant. You say, well, I can't pray with my wife because we're kind of distant. It could be that you got the cart before the horse. It could be that your lack of praying together hasn't kept you close and you've drifted. I'm telling you, praying together will bring you together. That's a pretty good meme right there, if you don't mind me saying. So praying together will bring you together. So do you pray with your spouse? If you don't, you're undermining your marriage. Do you have to be a great orator to lead your spouse in prayer, sir? No, but if you're not, you're going to blow up your marriage. You're going to undermine the strength of what it should be. Number 2, fighting dirty. Oh boy, we're talking character assassinations. We're talking about the, oh yeah? Well, what about your uncle? That is dirty fighting, degrading the other person. You just want to win the argument. You just are willing to hit just kidney punches. You just box them behind the head. I think that's against the rules in boxing, if I'm not mistaken.
I do think so.
Hitting behind the head. I don't know why. Really, if you think about this, we should be boxing backwards. You'd have to work on your shoulder rotation. But I would think getting hit in the back of the head would be less painful than getting hit in the face. What were they thinking when they wrote those rules? You're willing to box behind the ears. You're going to undermine your marriage. Number 3, bringing up the past. bringing up past sins, bringing up past failures and mistakes. Bury them. Be done with them. But she still does it. Bury it. Lose it. Just like God does with you. Number four, staying unhealthily connected to your immediate family. This is the leave-cleave principle. Has nothing to do with that family back in the 50s, where they left it to their son, whose name, strangely enough, was Beaver. You leave and cleave to your spouse. This is what Genesis 2 tells us, again, that you leave that relationship to form a new relationship and a new identity. That's why there's a name change. That is why these two become one. And that's the priority union. And it's been a bit of an eye-opener for me to discover. I've read different people saying that this is actually a pretty consistent problem in marriages that are struggling, that the husband or the wife have not left mom and dad. Now, please note, it doesn't mean abandoned. It doesn't mean that they're toxic and they're terrible and you never talk to them again. But it means they're not the priority relationship anymore. Your honey is. That's the new covenant relationship. You leave and you cleave and you stop comparing your spouse to your mom or your dad. You stop running to them for everything. You counsel with your spouse. That is your confidant. That is the one who should be most helpful for you. Doesn't mean you can't ever call them up and say, hey, what do you think about this? But you're not beholden to them. You don't have to do what they recommend. You make the wisest decision for your tribe and for your family. You can value their opinion. But when you make major life decisions, you make it with your spouse, not your parent. Question, have you left it and clefted? I don't know about the tense on that, but you get the point. Number five, putting conditions on love or respect. That's the problem with the I'll scratch your back, you scratch mine principle of his needs, her needs, love languages. I'll do this for you because I've got an expectation you're going to do it for me. In other words, that type of love is conditional, not sacrificial. Your spouse has a love language. I grant you that's probably true. The problem with using the love languages to be in a relationship with somebody you love in order to get love back is that you are not genuinely loving from the heart. You speak somebody's love language because you love them, not because they're going to speak your love language back to you. That's conditional. And that's what we do when we do things only for the sake of getting things back. And by the way, this will come out if you've ever said something like, for all the stuff that I do for you, this one time you could. You've been doing it conditionally. Who wrote this article? This is from Michelle Lazurek. Sorry for not giving you credit, Michelle. As wives, we should respect our husbands, whether they deserve it or not. When wives can show their husbands respect, we can in turn show ourselves respect and thus honor our marriages. Husbands must love their wives, whether they deserve it or not. It may not always look like holding hands or other signs of affection, but loving your wife means listening to her, supporting her during trials, taking her opinions into account before making a decision. If not, kaboom. Number six, prioritizing being right rather than having right relationship. You just gotta win. Number seven, shutting down communication. You just don't talk about much anymore. And if I could add an eighth, might I lean on Dr. Greg Gifford to suggest not listening? It's going to blow up your marriage. Take it away, Dr. Gifford.
Listening is the most important relational skill you can cultivate. Listening. You want to damage everything in life, be dismissive. Minimize what people say, talk over them, interrupt them.
Jimmy, what do you think about what Greg is doing here? I am so sorry.
Counter-argue or maybe even verbally counter-argue with them. Watch the way it destroys relationships. I have described conflict like this. You ready for it? Conflict is the ambulance. It's the crisis that necessitated the ambulance at the bottom of the hill. So when you're learning conflict resolution, you've already had conflict, you see? What is communication? It's the guardrails at the top of the hill. Listening is going to prevent you from having more and more conflict. Let's say it another way. And I hate to be negative, but I want to be pointed with you. If you have a lot of conflict in your life, let me tell you something about yourself. Are you ready for it? You're a bad listener. You're a bad listener. Yeah, you have to work on valuing other people, seeking to understand what they're saying. And as you do that, it will lend itself towards godly communication, actually speaking to build up. When you listen and understand, there's less of this, less clashing, less fighting, listening. If you haven't heard that episode, I would encourage you, go back, listen to the episode.
What episode is he? He's referring to Transform the Podcast. That happened to be episode 4 on communication. So helpful. You want your marriage to thrive. You don't want it to just survive. Hey, there's another good podcast with Brad Bigney, also available at Fortis Plus for free. A question, how'd you do on the blow up your marriage exam? This is Wretched Radio.
Breaking news. In a world where biblical truth is increasingly rare, Fortis Institute is actually expanding. We're expanding our reach every single month. And get this, churches are actually getting stronger through solid biblical teaching. And here's the story. Your gift gets doubled right now through a matching grant. That means twice the impact, twice the reach, twice the transformation. Think more resources, more teaching, more churches equipped with truth that matters. We're not just maintaining around here. We're growing. More radio stations, more content, more believers getting equipped, more churches being strengthened. And unlike those clickbait headlines the world tries to feed us, this is actual verifiable impact. The fine print? Just one thing. The matching grant opportunity ends December the 31st. That's it. No complicated conditions, just a straightforward chance to double your impact. Visit FortisInstitute.org. That's FortisInstitute.org. Because while everybody else is backing down, we're stepping up. FortisInstitute.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Master's University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Master's University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Master's University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Hey, let's take a minute and talk about your Christmas shopping list. You know, the one with all of those people who either have everything or return everything. Well, from now through Christmas, Fortis Institute is running a sale up to 75% off of everything in the Fortis store. Here's what makes this better than another ugly Christmas sweater. Spend $75, we're going to throw in Thou Shalt Judge featuring Justin Peters and Todd Friel completely free. It's giving the gift of biblical wisdom. And we'll even cover shipping on orders over $75, because between untangling Christmas lights and dodging invites to your office Christmas party, you've already got enough stress this time of year. Listen, you could waste your Christmas budget on another gadget that'll be obsolete by Valentine's Day, or you could give something that's been relevant for about 2,000 years. Just visit FortisInstitute.org. That's FortisInstitute.org. And while everybody else is out panic buying scented candles and gift cards, you could actually be giving something that won't end up at next year's White Elephant Exchange. FortisInstitute.org.
Know your reformers. Jan Hus, a Czech priest, was inspired by the writings of John Wycliffe to preach against papal excess and false doctrines such as transubstantiation. Even as he was burned at the stake by the Catholic Church, he continued to preach the gospel and sing the Psalms.
This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
But enough about you. Let's talk about your spouse. This is Wretched Radio, which, by the way, if you want a rule for a happy marriage, don't talk about your spouse in any other way than positive, affirming, praising with any other human being on the planet. In other words, talking to other people and making wise cracks about your wife's this or that, your husband's way of doing this or that, very, very bad idea. It is never wise to say anything but wonderful things about your spouse to others. After all, would you go about the business of saying terrible things about yourself to others? Because you are talking about yourself. Let me explain that. It's a one flesh union. That means if you disparage your wife, you're disparaging yourself. You disparage your husband, you're disparaging you. And we don't do that about ourselves. Hey, Jimmy, did I tell you about myself? Yeah, I was like super selfish this morning. And wow, what a jerk. Don't do that. Why would we do that about our spouse? And speaking of rules, before we get to speaking about your spouse, Tim Challies, bless his heart. Here at Wretched Radio, we call it Wide World of Christian Stories. That's what we do right there. In other words, I take a bunch of random stuff, slap it together so that it's thematic. Well, here's what Tim Challies wrote in a collection of random thoughts on Christian living. Not every thought makes a good article. And sometimes an entire article can be distilled down to a single thought. I wish most of them were. For those reasons, I like to occasionally create what I've created here, a roundup of brief random thoughts about Christian living. At least we have a theme song, Tim.
The thrill of victory.
And he wrote several of them about marriage. In all likelihood, no one will ever sin against you more frequently than your spouse. That's true. There's more opportunity. It would be wise then to marry a person who knows when and how to ask forgiveness. In the same way, you'll never sin against anyone more frequently than your spouse. It would be wise then to marry a person who knows when and how to extend forgiveness. That is the parable of the unjust worker. This is this unjust slave. It probably was a satrap working for the king, collecting taxes. It was time for him to turn over what he had collected, and he was short, like a gajillion squillion dollars. It was like 10,000 denarii. It was, I think, the estimate, because a denarii was how much you made per day. That was about the weight, a penny per day. Where's the union when you need them, huh? It was a penny per day. And the king forgave the pleading slave who said, I can't pay out, but I promise I'll pay it back. If I recall, it was the equivalent of like 600,000 to 800,000 days of labor. He couldn't possibly pay it back. That's the point of the parable. It was a massive debt. And what does he do? He goes and finds another servant who owes him 100 days labor. And the guy can't pay it back. He pleads, be patient with me. And he strangles the dude. That's the ungrateful servant. And the point of that parable, got to preach about this, I think, 2 weeks ago at Alpharetta Bible Church. It's in the context of brother and sister Christians, but it's also familial. It's also in the family that we are able to forgive quickly. We are the quick forgivers. We're the quick repenters because we realize we've been forgiven an insurmountable amount of debt that we could never pay ourselves. That's the point of the parable. And I think the key to applying it is it's right there. How can you not have an attitude of quick forgiveness when you've been forgiven a mountain of forgiveness? Your sins are so much more than any sin anybody has committed against you. That's the point. You've committed 600,000 to 800,000 days of sin labor. Okay, I think I might have lost my way here. But the point is, somebody, your spouse, about 100 days labor against you. because you've done that sin more frequently to your master than anybody will ever do to you. Furthermore, it's against the great king versus your spouse simply sinning against little old you. And that helps us to forgive. It helps us to not harbor grudges and to let roots of bitterness grow down deep into our hearts. That is, I think, the most helpful thought that you can carry into a marriage, that you're the biggest sinner in the house. And it should be rapid fire. I sinned. Forgive me. I do forgive you. I love forgiving you because I've been forgiven much. I guess I got to preach about this. It really is staggering, isn't it? How we so stammer. And it's like somebody put a gate on our vocal cords that can't let the words fly out, that are the first words, really, in the entrance into the kingdom. Now, these aren't words you need to say, but you need to understand what a totally depraved wretch you are before you can become a member of God's kingdom. You've got to be convinced of your total depravity to understand the magnificent grace of Jesus Christ. So when you say, I'm a Christian, you are telling the world, I'm totally depraved. Why is it so hard for us to say that to our spouse or to our children? I know what it is in my heart, pride, reeking, stinking pride, because I don't want them to think that their father could possibly sin, which is a side splitter. That is a gut buster, knee slapping, nonsensical statement. Because let me tell you, if anybody who knows that you're a sinner, it's your family. Back to Tim Challies on marriage, which brings us together today. When many cultural conventions dictate the importance of establishing a certain level of wealth or achieving a certain level of vocational success before getting married, the Bible does not. Ooh, this is controversial, Tim. Because I understand this. I know of parents who don't want their kids to get married yet because they're not financially stable. I feel that. I think there's a tug. Because you want to, if it's your daughter, but not put her in a situation that's precarious. And if it's your son, you want him to be man and up and able to provide for his own family and not have to get provision from you. I feel that. Here's Tim's take on it. The Bible doesn't have that standard. You can get married without owning a home or beginning your first career. You can even get married before finishing college. There will be certain matters of wisdom to consider. Yep, that's very true. But God nowhere forbids or warns against it. It may take a lot less than you think it does to survive quite happily together. Huh, Jimmy, you agree with the Challies on that?
Well, I mean, I agree with him. He's obviously correct biblically, but it's hard to look at my oldest son and say, yeah, you're ready to get married.
Well, but that's I think the issue. The issue isn't how much stuff he's amassed, but is he a man who's grabbing it?
Right.
That's the phrase that keeps coming back to me in my mind about young men these days. Many of them aren't willing to go, I'm going, that's the path, I'm going there. I'm going to have a home and I'm going to make sure that my family is well provided. I am going to do that. I think the attitude toward that, now, how much of that do they need to accomplish? Because you do have to be careful if you play that game. You might find yourself never getting married. How many square feet? How many bedrooms? How many bathrooms? Jack and Jill bathroom? Do they share the bathroom? What if it's a boy and a girl? Are you going to have two bedrooms that you need a pink and a blue? You can go on for forever and you're never going to get married. And so I think the key phrase in all of that is wisdom. One more random thought from Tim Challies. Nobody and nothing can make you sin. That's a tough pill to... It was Flip Wilson who persuaded us that the devil can make us do it. No, he can't. The devil can put temptations out there, but he can't make you sin. Neither can your spouse, nor can your kids, nor can your football team losing, nor can your boss who doesn't give you the raise that you want. They don't make you sin. They reveal the sin that is in you. In fact, who was it? Oh, it was Brad Bigney was just talking about that in Thrive. Get rid of the notion that you married Prince Charming or, you know, Princess Buttercup. Get rid of that, because what marriage is going to do is reveal a whole lot of sin in both of you. Your spouse is not causing you to sin. And sir, if you're, well, my spouse, she weren't for her, I wouldn't be looking at porn. Wrong. She does not make you look at porn. You want to look at porn. And for whatever it is that she's doing that's causing that squeeze, it's only revealing what is already in there. So don't blame your sin on your spouse. Doesn't mean that you can't talk about a correction of something that your spouse is doing. But you cannot blame your spouse for your own sin. That is entirely on you. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. Now, this year's National Defense Authorization Act is making waves, and not just for its typical budget allocations. Congress has decided to ban taxpayer funding for gender transition surgeries for children under the military's TRICARE program. That means no more sterilizing minors under the guise of gender-affirming care. Add to that the Supreme Court case over Tennessee's ban on these procedures, and you can see the tide turning. Radical ideology has no place in public policy, especially when it harms children. Well, here's one for those who think daytime TV is unbearable. Comedian Rob Schneider is developing a talk show to compete directly with The View. Schneider's version, an all-women panel that's funny, entertaining, and non-woke. He promises a show that won't be drowning in politics or shaming the audience. Imagine that, humor and common sense on the TV. Almost revolutionary, and considering the declining ratings of legacy media, a fresh alternative probably couldn't come at a better time. Meanwhile, as Americans continue to reel from Hurricane Helene's devastation, FEMA officials were halfway across the globe at a ritzy climate conference. The agency's top brass spent their time pushing climate activism, praising Biden's infrastructure policies, and complaining there were too many white women in leadership. Instead of addressing pressing domestic issues, FEMA was busy promoting gender-responsive climate action and lecturing about net zero policy. It's a perfect illustration for a government more concerned with global virtue signaling than the people it's supposed to serve. And the abortion industry seems to be facing a crisis of its own. According to a new report, abortion clinics are struggling to find abortionists, so much so that many are ditching in-person care altogether for the convenience of mail-order murder pills. This year alone, 29 clinics shut down or paused operations while 46 opened, but the trend is clear. Chemical abortions are now their bread and butter, all at the expense of women's health. Now, it's official, CNN's ratings are tanking so badly that they've fallen behind the Food Network and Hallmark channels. Despite major news stories from Trump's cabinet announcements to the chaos in Syria, viewers just aren't tuning in. They ranked 17th in primetime last week, drawing fewer viewers than MTV and Nick at Night. Ohio lawmakers have decided that planting an opponent's flag at midfield after a football game should be a felony. Yes, a felony, punishable by up to 1 year in prison and a $2,500 fine. It's the Ohio Sportsmanship Act, and it would apply only to Ohio Stadium because apparently bruised egos now warrant jail time. And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at fortisinstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Books of the Bible. Paul wrote the second letter to the Thessalonians to further encourage and instruct them in the face of persecution. Some Thessalonians feared that they had missed the Lord's return. Paul reminds them that God will punish those who persecute the church, and he will be faithful to return for his people. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Speaking of tough decisions, this is Wretched Radio. Tim Challies. Another provocative statement, because it's a contentious issue, I think, for young people, but maybe especially parents. Should I encourage my kid to get married when they don't make whatever you esteem to be enough money? Or they haven't finished their pursuit of whatever, if it's tech school, If it's university, if it's an apprenticeship, maybe wait. Get a little more money in the bank, then maybe get out of an apartment into... When do you have enough to get married? And that is a slippery slope. You got to watch out for that, because that can stall marriage for forever. And Tim Challies, it seems, is encouraging people, get married. I think the key is what he said inside of his comment. There's wisdom that needs to be applied, I think, on two levels. Number one, you need to let somebody know if they're getting married and they don't have a lot of stuff, you are going to have struggles and they are going to be real. You need to be ready for that. Second, the wisdom that needs to be applied is in analyzing what type of young people are we talking about here, especially the dude. Is he a sluggard? No, then he, but I really dig her. You need to get your act together. Now, that doesn't mean amassing a fortune, but it means that he's stepping up. I'm doing it. I'm going for this thing. And he shows it. That's a young man that everybody can have confidence in and recognize, you know what, they're going to have storms, but they'll get through them because of their character. So I think those are the wisdom elements that need to be applied. I don't think that you should say to every young person, get married no matter, just find a sweetie and get married. And it doesn't matter if you're only working 8 hours a week, just get married. No, I don't think that's wisdom, especially if they don't have the attitude of, yep, I'm doing this. And I've also noticed, however, a lot of young people are increasingly struggling with, I think, a related issue, and that is knowing what their career should be. I've bumped into a number of young men, good dudes. These guys are solid, and they're trying to sort it. But they're trying to figure out, like, what my life should look like in 10 years, 20 years. Now, I'm a fan of coming up with like a 3-year and a 5-year plan. Having said that, I think the specificity of that plan is what causes a lot of young people confusion. I'm going to school to be fill in the blank. I'm an architect. Okay, that's what I want to be. I want to be an architect. And to that, I say, cool, you study hard. But then they're trying to figure out, what does that degree actually look like in a decade? And then how do I get there? How do I get to that thing? And I understand this confusion because I think it's good to have goals like that. Having said that, I also think it's important for young people to understand that you're not going to be able to plan 10 years. You're just not. And there are very few people I know who are doing what they studied for, or at least not in the bullseye. And they're quite content. Now, does that mean that you can't desire that and aim for that? Of course you can. But you need to understand that life and God's sovereignty are going to overrule what you think your vision of what 10 years from now should look like. Be careful with that. So maybe rather than, I'm going to be a bridge architect in Alpharetta, and I'm going to have the corner office on the 3rd floor. Be careful of that. Instead, I think having godly goals are bigger and better. I'm going to be this mature in my faith. I am going to be a man that can be relied on. I am going to be a woman of character. And I am going to take one step at a time, being faithful to first and foremost, grow in godliness, and then go. See, here's where the language gets tricky. Go where the Lord leads you. And I think the problem might be in that understanding of leading, that God has a particular destination for you, and you got to figure out what that zip code is. Otherwise, you're not going to be in God's will because you're not following his leading. His leading is for you to be godly and to make decisions that are wise and in alignment with the Bible. And it might end up in the 3rd floor of the architectural firm in Alpharetta designing bridges. Might. It might be something radically different, but that's okay. Because circumstances, which aren't nilly-willy, they're God-ordained, opportunities, and pursuing the bigger things. May I ask, if you're young, what is your dream? If you could write it, most likely it does include things like career, job, what you're doing, house, location of the house. And I don't think those things are sinful to ponder, but I don't think that should be your dream. I think your dream needs to be considering Christian character and how much I'm going to look like Jesus Christ. My dream is that I'm a man that doesn't get whipped and tossed around and blown all over the place by every wind of doctrine and every fad and every trend. I want to be solid. I want to be a man who responds rightly in circumstances that differ from moment to moment. I want to be steady Eddie. I don't want to constantly be tearing people down either with my words or in my heart. I want to be somebody who builds up. Those are the goals. That should be your dream, to look like Jesus Christ. And if that's your dream, then I got to tell you, so all the other stuff just works itself out. And your job then is to be faithful, not orchestrate necessarily what you're going to be doing in 10 years, but to simply be faithful. Because you might not be able to write your ticket to the third floor. You might not have the skills. And furthermore, the goal of having a spouse and children, that's a bigger goal than career. It's a better goal than career. Please note, it's always, I think, wise and appropriate to remind all of us that being single is not sinful. We're talking about what is traditional, and that is most men and most women get married and have babies, although increasingly that's less so these days, isn't it? But that should be the goal, because that's a bigger thing. It's a better thing. Believe me, it's a bigger and better thing. I would not trade my wife and children for a job that made me happy. If I were in a miserable job, and I've had some of those, I would rather work there but come home to a wife and children. That is way better than career stuff. All that to say, have your priorities right. Let them be biblical. And don't think that life has turned out to be a complete miserable failure because I'm not designing bridges in Alpharetta, Georgia. That's a low goal. Go for godliness. Go for the good things. Go for the sweet things. Go for the delightful things. Go. If you're young and you're thinking about not getting married and having kids because you perhaps bought the narrative that it's scary, have you ever had a child, not your own, wrap their arms around your neck and hold on to you for dear life? Maybe, probably not. But when it happens and it's your child, Jimmy, if you were selling that at a store, what would the price tag be?
I don't think you could even answer
that. You don't have a big enough label for that.
No.
You can't. It's an intangible thing. It's the good things. It's the deep and profound things of life. Those are the goals. So sort out what you're doing. Be faithful. If you're just a hard worker, the opportunities are going to come. So here might be a good example of this entire diatribe. You're wanting to be that architect designing bridges in Alpharetta, and you're studying for that, but you've got an opportunity to get married and start a career, but it's going to pull you away from that job. What should you pursue? Now, each circumstance demands wisdom. Like, how far away is it? Could you wait for them? All of that. But what I'm telling you is choose marriage. Choose having kids. Choose that. And just be faithful. If you're a hard worker, just be a hard worker and find a gig that supports the better thing. Work serves. Work is important. But work is merely the vehicle that helps you to enjoy and delight in the things that God has provided for us that are indeed delightful. Giving money to your church, that should be delightful for you. Supporting your family, that's delightful. My family, I don't care how I had to go to work and slog through another day. I get to do that. That's, I think, the priority life. And you just keep on stepping. You keep on being faithful. Keep on being godly. Sure, you can keep your eyes out for opportunities. Go to Indeed as often as you want to, but don't let it be an idol. Work is important, and we must be hard workers because our God is a hard worker. But don't be deceived and have life get put on hold because of career, marriage, and children. Much better. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know what keeps us up at night? It's watching our culture sprint away from biblical truth like it's running a marathon in the wrong direction. But here's the thing. While others might be tiptoeing around tough issues, we're digging our heels in and standing firm. That's kind of our thing at Fortis Institute. And right now, this very moment, something incredible is happening. A generous friend of the ministry looked at what we're doing and said, hey, let's pour some rocket fuel on this. They're matching every single gift through December the 31st, up to $500,000. Think about that. Your gift doesn't just support bold biblical teaching. It literally doubles in impact. Listen, I'm not just talking about keeping the lights on. I'm talking about equipping believers, strengthening local churches, and being that clear voice of truth in a world that desperately needs it. So if you want to make your year-end giving count twice, just visit FortisInstitute.org. That's FortisInstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
The life issue. We cannot disengage from the battle. And there is a way that you can win a life and rescue a soldier who's about to be executed through abortion. Preborn.org/wretched. Ultrasounds still save lives. These pregnancy centers that progressives would love to shut down or arrest people for praying in front of abortuaries, they're still doing excellent work and babies are still being rescued. This is a tangible way to save a life. An ultrasound is $28. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. Want to engage in the battle? This ain't about politics. This is about saving those who are staggering to the slaughter, period. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Hey, do you ever wish you could be in two places at once? Well, your money can. That's right. Thanks to a $500,000 matching grant, every dollar you give to Fortis Institute is literally having an identity crisis. It thinks it's $2. And who are we to argue with confused currency? And I know what you're thinking. It sounds like one of those too-good-to-be-true deals. But I promise there is no fine print, no while supplies last, and definitely no purchase of additional items required. Just straight-up dollar-for-dollar matching. Here's the deal. You gift $100, it becomes $200. Gift $500, it transforms into $1,000 faster than you can say tax-deductible donation. And if you're feeling really generous, $5,000 becomes $10,000. But unlike those infomercial offers that run every other week, this one, it really does have an expiration date, December 31st. That's when this magical money multiplying moment ends. Just visit FortisInstitute.org right now. That's FortisInstitute.org. In a world where everything seems to be getting smaller, isn't it nice to see your impact getting bigger? FortisInstitute.org.
Lexicon. Providence is the word we use to describe God's preserving, upholding, and governing of His creation. God sustains His creation day to day through ordinary means established at the beginning of time, and He intervenes in miraculous ways. In all things, God is working for His glory and for the good of those who love Him. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Question, do you trust your spouse? Another question, do you have to trust your spouse? This is Wretched Radio. Have you ever pondered that question? Does the Bible command you to trust your spouse? I read that headline from Biblical Counseling Coalition, and I thought, well, he says, boom, because you feel like, well, I should trust my spouse, but does God command that? Is it assumed? And I think the reason that the question is worth pondering is because there are times in a marriage or in a familial relationship of any kind or just friendship where sometimes you feel like, I don't know that I can trust that person. the relationship has been really damaged. Do I have to? Spoiler alert, the answer is no. You don't have to. Ideally, of course, you should. Let's walk through this, shall we? There's only one person that you are commanded to trust unconditionally. Just one. His name is Jesus Christ. You can trust him. He will never fail you. He will never let you down. He will never disappoint you ever, ever, ever. He does everything he says that he will do. And he does not do things to harm his children. He does things to grow his children that might be a wee bit on the painful side, but everything he ordains is good. His will is always holy. Always. So he's the one that you can trust unconditionally. This is from the article. Every Christian spouse, however, is married to a sinner. And every Christian is a person in progress. So there are going to be moments where trust between spouses is rightfully questioned or misplaced. And that is, I think, a word that I think is wise. Do you have to trust a philandering spouse? No. Do you have to trust the guy who says he doesn't look at porn, but then you catch him again and he says he doesn't look at porn and you catch him again and he says he doesn't look at porn and you catch him again? No, you don't. And we should all know that. Trust is a very precious commodity. And it is something that is earned. And if you do something that breaks trust, you're going to have to work very hard to rebuild that trust. It does not have to happen immediately. In fact, wisdom would say sometimes it shouldn't, and maybe sometimes it should never, depending on the relationship and the response. Trust is based upon consistency of character over time. And the only person presented in the Bible who is worthy of unconditional trust is God. So we start there. Number two, there are times when it is downright unwise to trust our spouses, especially in cases when someone is in unrepentant sin. Ouch. That kind of stinks, doesn't it? Because that's not what a marriage should be. I always think in Genesis 2, the sweetness of this, they were naked and not ashamed. That says volumes. It says trust was fully intact. No concerns about any sort of critique that would be harmful. Nothing that would bring you embarrassment with another human being. What a sweet setting that is. What a lovely marriage that is. When you can trust your spouse with everything and anything and not worry about, you're kidding me. You what? Because it's sin that has introduced that sort of skepticism of one another, that we can be critical of one another, and that we can do things that break trust. This article, I think, might be helpful if trust has been broken and you are struggling. You're like, I know I should trust her, but... Well, I'm not like encouraging this, and I'm not suggesting that trust shouldn't be aggressively pursued. But maybe you can be freed to know you don't have to. To the article, our practical theology must be open to the possibility that following Christ as our model for Christian living may at times involve not trusting other people. And we have an example of that in Jesus himself, who did not what? Entrust himself to people because he knew their thinking. They were following him because of the miracles, and so he did not entrust. He used that sort of discretion to determine whether this was wise or not. Micah 7, 5 through 6 crushes any notion of unconditional trust in marriage and the family. Just as a side note here, perhaps at the moment, this isn't to suggest that trust goes on the shelf and we don't worry about it anymore. I don't have to trust these people. I just need to live with them. No. You want to get back to the garden marriage. You want to make sure that there is trust. You want to be working for that. You don't want to do things that will violate trust. It's a crucial component to a healthy relationship, not just marriage. But the point of this article is you don't have to. Christians are called to love their spouses. Trust is essential for a healthy marriage. And love seeking the highest good of our spouses may look like strict accountability, asking for pledges, and verifying actions. All right, let's use the all too familiar scenario. The dude looks at porn and he repents. That's a good thing. And she says, moving forward, I'm going to need to take a look at your phone in the morning, noon, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, 9 o'clock, and midnight. I'll get up at 3 a.m. and I'm going to look at your phone. How should you react? Absolutely, dear. Not a problem, honey. You should not be angry. You should not be offended. Don't you trust me? And the answer to that is no, she doesn't have to, because you've destroyed trust. You violated trust. So don't get all snippy if she wants to hold you accountable for something. This is a component of your marriage that needs to be regained. There may be times that being wise as serpents and innocent as doves requires telling a spouse, based upon how you've been living, I can't trust you right now. You want to, and I'm going to watch you, and I'll increasingly give it back to you, perhaps by degrees. And by the way, don't we do this with our kids? Don't we do this with our kids? You hold them accountable. You ask them questions. And we assume they shouldn't get snippy with us. They probably do, but we assume that they shouldn't. Same thing is true inside the context of a marriage. If spouses engage in unrepentant sin, love does not mean trusting them or turning a blind eye to questionable behavior. Rather, the most loving thing to do would be to call another brother, sister, or your pastor and begin restorative church discipline. Hello. That's what the church is for. I don't care what your gender is. You need the church. In this context, more often than not, women need the church for this reason. That the church will jump in and hold a dude accountable. We actually talked about this in church on Sunday. The elders and I discussed it. To determine our posture, what will we do when a woman approaches us and says, my husband is doing fill in the blank? What is our posture? And I recognize there are shades and not merely two alternatives, but one option is, well, madam, you need to get back in there and you need to grow in patience and loving kindness. And remember, you're a sinner too. All of those things are true, but that's one option. Here's the other option. If it has been verified, it is verifiable that there has been abuse and the woman has been harmed physically and is in danger, what's the posture of your church? Our posture, we concluded, is, sir, if you're physically abusing your wife, you just invited every man in this congregation into your marriage, because we are going to build a fortress around that woman and protect her from you. And we will not encourage her to go back and endure your brutality. You will have to demonstrate to this body that you are a man who is safe. Count on it. That will be immediate. It will be without consideration. Again, it will be verified. It will have to be known as true. We will not see you as an enemy, but we will see you as one who is a danger to woman. That woman, who's our sister, you're not going to have that access. It's up to you to step it up and show that you are a man who is worthy. That's our posture. What's your church's posture? How are you going to protect those women? How are you going to encourage those women? Number three from the article, as Christians, we're expected to treat others as God treats them, including extending grace and trust to spouses who don't deserve it. In other words, You're going to want to be a trust giver, but you are going to practice some discretion as to how much trust you give. Don't hear this from this article at Biblical Counseling Coalition and think, oh, I don't ever have to trust him again. No, you want to trust him again and give him every opportunity to prove it, because trust is crucial for the health and happiness of your marriage. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.